Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Today we have Heather Schapter, who is the executive director of Crossroads International. And before I bring Heather on, we're going to watch a short video from Crossroads International.
Girls are empowered.
Girls are uncut diamonds.
Girls are powerful.
Tanzania and my girls empowerment lab bus from the start to speak confidence.
I've learned that as girls, we need to have our place, we need to be known. You have to show yourself out to the world, you need to be strong.
Projet NAMCAM a eu beaucoup d'impact sur nos jeunes. Ça nous a permis de renforcer nos capacités sur la santé de la reproduction, de maîtriser tout sujet qui est lié à la santé de la reproduction, par exemple.
Il y a eu diminution de grossesse précoce, de mariage d'enfants, de mutilation génitale féminine. Et aussi, nos parents ont arrêté de prendre ces sujets comme des sujets tabous.
L'impact que NAMCAM a fait sur ma communauté est que dès son arrivée, il y a beaucoup de choses qui ont commencé à changer. Avant, nous les jeunes, nous avons des problèmes, nous les voyons, mais on ne savait pas quoi faire. Et NAMCAM nous les a éclaircis et il nous sensibilise surtout. Mais maintenant, je suis une porte-parole de ma communauté grâce à NAMCAM.
Je suis la présidente du club des jeunes filles à Fongolim. Le projet de NAMCAM a contribué à la diminution de beaucoup de fléaux, comme l'abandon scolaire, les grossesses et mariages précoces. Dans le club, j'ai appris beaucoup de choses. J'ai appris les règles d'hygiène menstruelle, l'importance de se soutenir entre filles. J'arrive à discuter sur des sujets qui étaient autrefois tabous avec mes parents. Mes espoirs pour l'avenir, pour moi, ma communauté, est que les droits des enfants, et des filles et des femmes soient respectés. Et que les violences faites aux femmes et aux filles soient bannies.
I want to be a journalist because I can bring the briefness on TV.
I want to be a lawyer in my future.
I want to become a gynecologist because I want to help the female reproductive system.
I want to be a nurse because I want to help sick people in the future.
Okay, we are ready to bring Heather to the stage. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you, Hillary. Thank you, thank you. Great to be here. Great to be with you.
Yes, so that was an incredible video. We do want to talk about, we will talk about Crossroads. We also want to talk about you and how you got there. So I'm going to let you start us off with what you think would give us an understanding of why are you working there? Why does that call to you?
Thank you. I think from a really young age, I just had this thing that I'd like to end poverty. And, you know, not really for any good reason. It's not like I had to be the one to be involved, but it just really called to me. And there is an aspect of diverse culture. So it was a particular, I'm really interested in and see it completely possible to not have poverty on the planet, and in particular, where poverty is the most dire. So not necessarily looking in North America or Europe, and I don't mean to say there aren't challenges as well, but really looking to see where there's the greatest poverty on the planet, which also happens to be where there's incredible diversity. So I was really interested in the diversity of cultures and perspectives.
Now, when you say at a young age, what age are you talking about?
But I started my first non-government, like my first charity, you know, like that. So at least from when I was 17.
Wait. When you were 17, you started your own charity?
Yes. Yeah. I started my own charity. So at least from that time, and that was a charity that was founded in volunteerism. Just a simple idea. There were teens, and of course I was a teen too, but there were teens that were, you know, kind of getting into trouble, you know, in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It was in the summer, you know, when they didn't have school, and they had incredible dancing talents. They really liked to dance, you know, music, dance, like that. And so, you know, there were a lot of senior citizens' homes where I was living. And so we thought, and, you know, they didn't have a lot of people visiting them. So we organized the teens to do dance routines and come and visit the seniors. And then that turned into, you know, crafts. And anyway, they all fell in love with each other. And 10 years later, that thing was still going. I can remember I got a call in a completely different part of the world saying, we're having a reunion of, it was called Helping Hands Volunteens. Would you like to join us? And they had no idea that I founded it.
When I was a teenager, I was out, you know, driving around looking for
those teens.
I was a good girl, okay. And I got good grades and I did all my homework, but we still were driving around looking for guys. I wasn't thinking about starting a charity. Like how did that happen to come across your mind? Like, you know, or it just did.
You know, I think, you know, I grew up in Newfoundland. So it's the most easterly province in Canada. And, you know, the culture is really, people really take care of each other. It's just a really taking care of. And, you know, my mom was a huge volunteer. She was the provincial commissioner for Girl Guides of Canada. And I think it was just really inculcated in the family and in the culture to be of service. So really, it was just kind of the water, literally,
yeah.
You know, like
swimming
in. So, and like, it was totally joyous. It was like, it wasn't like a hardship. It was like, I love this. I love making a difference and like that.
And were you one of the dancers too?
Yes. Madonna, I think it was. Papa, don't preach.
Was it really?
That was one of the songs, yeah.
Oh, how fun. No, that makes sense. No, but because I didn't grow up with, you know, I wouldn't have thought of it but, you know, again, my family wasn't doing that.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I can remember when I was, this goes way back, right? So, when I was in kindergarten, so at that time, the Vietnamese refugees, so this is during the Vietnam War, they were, you know, some refugees were coming to Canada, perhaps other places, but and there was a Vietnamese refugee in our class. And Mrs. Stead, our kindergarten teacher, you know, when it was time to, you know, go to the washroom, she said, Heather, can you take, you know, the Vietnamese refugee, could you take her to the washroom? It's what you did, right? You went in twos always.
Yeah.
And I said, of course. And so I can still remember she opened the stall door. And instead of, you know, sitting down, she jumped and she squat. Right. And I said, where are you from? That is awesome. Right. That that she's different, right? As in, yeah, she's from a different place. So that's kind of the fascination from a young age with the diversity piece.
Oh, that was kindergarten. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's so interesting, right? That it started so young.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. So you started a charity at 17, like most 17-year-olds, just kidding.
That's a cool thing to create.
Yes.
Like most 17-year-olds, yeah.
Well, Newfoundland, you said you take care of each other. Do you think that's all over Canada? Because I don't necessarily... I mean, I guess there would be pockets of it here. I'm in Connecticut, USA. You know, churches do. I wouldn't say nobody does, but do you think that's all over Canada or just particular to there?
Yeah, I mean, I think similarly there'd be pockets, you know, in every province, you know, for sure. And I think at least Canadians would say that the Newfoundland culture in particular, you know, does stand out. And, you know, it might be from a history of a lot of hardship with the fishery. And, you know, there might be like you have to pull together because it's difficult. It can be difficult, or it used to be, you know, in the past. So it does have a reputation of that kind of generosity. Like even my mother-in-law, you know, who's a Newfoundlander, you know, she will say to me, you know, she'll kind of lean in, you know, when we're in a conversation, and she'll say, you know, there's a single mom down the street, Heather, and she will never want for anything. You know, that kind of a quiet, no one makes a big deal out of it. It's just what people do.
Wow. That's so cool. I was just in my office, we were talking about how when COVID started, how some people, you know, bought all the toilet paper and they were just being so selfish, you know, as opposed to 9/11, which brought people together and so wonderful, you know. So it's interesting that, you know, the different cultures, I guess. And I know we're going to talk about culture today. So, okay. All right. So you started a charity, and then where did you go after that?
Eventually, you know, I thought, okay, so if I'm going to have some go really at ending poverty, I thought, I don't think it's with the charitable sector alone that's going to have that happen. So after my undergrad degree, I got a master's in business because I thought, you know, the business sector kind of runs the planet. I mean that in the best way, you know, like it has a lot to do with every society. And if we were ever going to scale the most effective poverty ending programs, I think we really need to partner with the business sector.
I'm stuck on something.
Sure.
You talked about the diversity and you talked about the charity you started. Where did the poverty part come in, that you wanted to end poverty? Were you like, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm.
I just had it like, it was just something that didn't need to be.
And how did you know about poverty? Like, did you see it? Like, where did, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, we were, I would say, kind of lower middle class income wise, but I would say in Newfoundland at that time, at least, you didn't see, right, the face of poverty, because people were taking care of each other and people certainly had, you know, challenges, but you wouldn't see it, you know, on the street like you might today, right? It's like homelessness. But it was just a, you know, I'm not sure kind of what the visibility was globally, except for the odd glimpses of those who were in St. John's who were from other places. I didn't know that their places where they came from were necessarily poor. I just knew there was an opportunity. There was like a condition globally that didn't need to be. And these people were fascinating and their cultures were fascinating. So, you know, let's get her done, you know, like that.
Wow. So it just... it seems like it just got you in the heart. for some
just
reason.
Got
right?
me in the heart, and yeah, and just like this is so doable, which I still have, you know, so doable.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. So you went, and what did you study undergrad?
Psychology. It's like an arts degree. Yeah.
So okay, so psychology, and then you partnered it with business. Okay.
Yeah.
And then where did you go after that?
So I started in the private sector, and you know, it was great because, you know, where else could you go to have a, you know, a wonderfully male dominated experience in the private sector? So, you know, I started in the railway.
Wow.
Yeah. And marketing in the railway. And it was an extraordinary experience. And it took me about 6 months to realize, wow, this is really not a fit. Not about the male dominated piece, but the private sector piece. Mm. And I had a female supervisor, female boss, who was such a role model. She was diminutive, you know, petite, and she was so respected and so powerful. And I went to her and I said, after about 6 months, I said, thank you so much. Like, this is such a great opportunity to be here. And I'm out to end poverty. Right? I can't believe still that I said that. And would you be willing to let me work here part time? And could I use your fax machine to fax out my resume and cover letters to not-for-profit ending poverty employers? And she said yes. So it took me at least 6 months, maybe longer. I worked part-time. I used the fax machine like that. So that was the first gig kind of in the private sector like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that like? Did you plan to say it, or it just came out, or like, that's amazing, right? That
you took a lot of courage, but I knew who she was. And she said, I'm for you to have your dreams fulfilled. So, I mean, that's what I now say to my employees, some of whom Crossroads is not a fit. And I will say, and they'll often stay in the sector or, you know, open their own business. And I will say, wow. I am for your dreams fulfilled. Yeah. So
Were you doing any personal development work or anything like that at that time that you got the courage?
That was before that time. Yeah. You know, I was always, because psychology was my undergrad, so I was very interested in motivation and, you know, just how people think and operate. So certainly lots of reading, but that was before I had done the LEM reform in 2001.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know what, when I was young, I think I had more courage. You know, I didn't really think things, not that I didn't think them through, but I wasn't as afraid as I got later. Like,
exactly. You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was my first job. Like, so I was like, what could, you know,
yeah.
What do I have to lose in a way? Right. So
that's amazing.
I knew she was great.
That's what a great boss. Okay.
Whew. Yeah.
All right. So then it took you 6 months and you got a not-for-profit job.
Yeah, exactly. So from then on, I, you know, worked with, you know, some of the kind of the best and the biggest, you know, in the field of ending poverty with, again, a focus on women and girls.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then, so I did that for many years. And then including, I got to work and live in Bangladesh and work with the largest non-governmental organization on the planet. They were then 25 years ago, and they still are. They're called BRAC, B-R-A-C. Yeah. And I can just share a short story about that. The founder, who's passed now, his vision, end of poverty through the empowerment of women. Now that's 30 years ago in Bangladesh. So, you know, Bangladesh then and was, right, it's a heavily hierarchical and, you know, male dominated. And that was his stand. So one of the examples was Brack wanted to put in place what's called sericulture and aquaculture programs. So the sericulture is the making of silk from the worms, because they also had a huge clothing business. So the saris, right, all of the beautiful clothing. And then aquaculture, fish farming. So he started out these enormous programs. And just to give you an idea, a single program would reach 2 million women.
Was he from there or was he from here?
He was Bangladeshi. Yeah.
Okay. And he knew, that's so amazing, right? That he saw that women were the...
They were the present and the future. And just to say that he's starting these two technical large scale programs, but he only wanted to have women work there. Well, how could you do that? So, because they didn't have any education in those two areas. So you know what he did? He created a Harvard model university so that women could be trained in sericulture and aquaculture as an example of the kind of work that they do. So I got to work with that incredible man and that incredible organization.
And what was your role there? What was that? Was the university already up or were you creating it or what?
I wasn't involved in the university. So what I was doing was decentralizing, kind of putting more in the hands of the women, new businesses that they could start up.
Wow.
So there was still like the starting of new businesses was still mostly top down in the organization, just kind of endemic of the culture. So with my partners there at BRAC, I said, well, what about, could we engage the women more directly in what businesses they think they could start? And most of the women were illiterate, but we found a way with them. And I have to tell you, Hillary, when I would meet with the women and with my colleagues, right, at BRAC, they were just so gobsmacked that someone asked them what they thought, you know, like that. And so then we kind of trained them like on five fingers, you know, how do you know if a business has a good shot? Right. So we would train them on, you know, uses local materials. Oh, okay. It looks like we can actually bring in more money than spend, you know, like that kind of thing. And BRAC went from starting about 10 businesses, small businesses every year to 10 every single month because of the women, you know, so just they're really empowered. So that was the work I got to do. We started with 10,000 women. It was spread to the 2 million women that were being served by the organization.
Wow. And how long were you there?
A little over 2 years.
That's incredible. 10 a year, 10 a month. Wow.
Just in case there's any Bangladeshi fabulous people listening, Ami Ektu Bagla Bolti Pari, which is I can speak a little Bengali.
Wow, that's incredible. 10 a year to 10 a month. How long did that take? Was that in the 2 years or was that?
Yeah, that was in the 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the businesses were successful and they thrived.
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and not all of them, of course, but they had a far greater startup and then success rate because BRAC's amazing. So yeah, that was Bangladesh and Haiti and different. I lived in Haiti as well. And so different places. And then I worked in the tech sector. So just to say kind of the next phase for me was I saw really great programs around the world. BRAC is one of the many examples, but very few programs or initiatives are scaled, like really scaled. And I thought maybe one of the leverage points could be technology. So I worked with a global tech firm and I headed up their non-governmental division to see how could we scale some of the best programs around economic empowerment for women in the Middle East and North Africa. And then I would say had kind of medium success. There was some failure around having investors fund kind of that initial phase where you need to do the investment, you know, in the technology to get it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What, like what kind of technology? Like, so you were still helping them start businesses or is this a different thing?
So this would be helping organizations that had really good training programs on how to start your business, how to be successful in your business, again, for, you know, women in, you know, really low income areas, and then how to have technology, because a lot of that would be still in person, Hillary, right? So there's a real limit then to the numbers. So how could technology support that? Okay. So that was way before COVID, right? So it was new even to look at, you know, could people use a tablet? You know, how could we connect through the internet? Even most of these women would not have access to the internet.
So you were trying to scale training them to start businesses, the scaling of the training.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that, and then I had my own leadership company looking to see how could I empower the leaders in organizations that were ending poverty so they could be more effective. So I did that for a decade as well.
Whoa.
Yeah.
While you were doing the other stuff or is this the next thing for 10
That was the next thing. Yeah. And then from that, then I had the idea, what would it be like? Maybe I could lead my own, like that doesn't have to be my organization, but maybe I could lead a whole organization, maybe like that. And then I started to speak that and share that. And then that.
And is Crossroads the first one that you've been leading?
It is.
Yeah, wow.
Exactly. So I've only ever led like departments or, you know, a division. I've never led a whole organization. So it's the first time.
And how do you like it?
I love it. It's a complete joy, you know, and there's things I notice that aren't my strengths, I would say, you know, like I would say on the admin side, it's not something... Mm-hmm. I wake up and like, I can't wait to fill out a form, you know, that kind of thing. And there's some forms to fill out or things to approve. And it's magnificent. And I can't wait every single day to be with my team and grow and expand and, you know, and make the difference we get to make.
Wow. That's so cool. Okay. Woo, it's amazing the progression, right? From jumping on the toilet seat to starting a charity, right? All that, and here you are. Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's talk about Crossroads, right? I think it's time. What I know when we talk, there's a lot you guys are doing and the countries, you know, where do you want to start with that?
Sure. So maybe the vision, right? So everything we do is for, you know, this vision. So it's one world. So we have a vision of like one world, and it's a world that is without poverty. So that's not present. And then it's a world where the rights of women and girls are fulfilled. So that's kind of always the beacon for everything we do. The organization has been around 65 years, and I can perhaps say in a minute about the kind of how it got started. And we are in 11 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. So that's where we operate. And we operate with and through partners in Africa. So our approach is local partners. They are the best place to say, what are the community priorities and what does the community need to fulfill on those priorities?
Now, they're not employees of you, right? You just...
That's right. They have their own employee structures. Exactly. Yeah. So we partner with them. They'll say, here are our priorities. Here's what we need, Crossroads, in terms of, you know, them being more effective. And then we get them primarily, you know, skilled volunteers to fulfill on that.
Okay. So skilled volunteers. And do you also give them funding or no?
And we give some funding. It's a smaller part of what we do, which I happen to like because, you know, sometimes there can be a dependency that gets created for any of us, right, who are receiving money from other sources. So there is some seed funding, but it's primarily around, we call it capacity strengthening. Some people think of it as training, whereas, mm-hmm. you know, whereas someone comes and is alongside an existing wow. staff or, you know, group of people so that when they leave, that capacity is strengthened and it's left, right? It's,
wow.
It's intact. Yeah.
That's amazing. So you're bringing them the skilled volunteers that have obviously a skill.
Yeah.
That they're going to impart in these places and then leave. And there it is.
And there it is, yeah. And is it okay to say how it all started?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have 2 minutes to the commercial. You want to take the commercial now? Let's take the commercial now. And then I don't have to interrupt you. Okay?
Yeah.
So we will be right back after a message from our sponsors.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you'd like to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, to your teams, to your businesses, please go to KikoriApp.com and schedule a chat and see if this is a fit for you. Also, if you would like to partner, my commitment is that we elevate the conversation and consciousness of the planet. I'm looking for partners, people who want to advertise, people who want to sponsor the show, please reach out to me at Hillary@gettingrealwithhillary.com and let's have a conversation and let's elevate the consciousness of the world together. And welcome back, Heather Schapter.
Thank you.
Yay. All right. Do you want to start with I know you were saying you had a story about how Crossroads was started.
Yeah.
Do you want to start? Yeah, there?
Let me share that because it speaks to the values of the organization. So in 1958, there was a gentleman by the name of Reverend Dr. James Robinson, based in the United States. And Reverend Dr. James Robinson thought that if he could possibly send American volunteers to Africa during the civil rights movement, those Americans certainly might provide something of value to the Africans, but he was really more interested in the new perspectives and even new views of the world that they would return with that could really provide a new future for the civil rights movement.
Wow. So, you know, I was thinking when you first told me that it was like in the 40s or 50s, but the civil rights were the 60s.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And exactly. Yeah. And
it seems like, so how many years? That's 60 years ago.
65.
That's scary.
And so that's the piece about the American kind of start. And then what I really love about it is it's that equality piece, right? It doesn't mean that we're better than, right? It's just the diversity of perspective that provides something else, a new view. And then there's a small group.
Yeah, and so how, I mean, I'm wondering how did his brain come up with that, but how, if they saw these other places where there wasn't equality, they would bring that back here and go, whoa, am I missing it?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly, but what I think, yeah, and certainly what our volunteers, you know, tell us over and over again today, it's just like, you know, when you go and you see that, wow, they kind of, you know, they don't eat meatloaf on Tuesday. You know, it's like they just do things really differently. So it's just that opening up of, wow, there's different people in the world. I mean, we're all, you know, okay, so similar in ways, but so it's just a different perspective that as simple as that. Like,
yeah. Okay. So it's like, we do it this way. Oh my God, there's another way to do it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or, you know, just seeing, wow, like these people who look so different, look how much love they have in their family or, you know, like that. So I really love the diverse, again, it's the diversity, right? And diversity of cultures. Yeah. No one is better than, it's not like that. It's just, there's a diversity of perspective. So that was the US. This is Canada. So there was a small group of individuals close to the border, US-Canada border, and they were so inspired by what they were having these volunteers share that they collected, and this is 65 years ago, $5,000, and they offered it to Reverend Dr. James Robinson for his initiatives. And he said, thank you, but really how you could best support me is to please start your own Crossroads in Canada. So that's how that was started 65 years ago in a place called London, Ontario. And less than a month ago, we returned to that place for the first ever 65 years of volunteering impact, a celebration of volunteers and the volunteering movement. And the founder of Crossroads spoke, and so many of those part of that original setting up, raising funds, really speaking to the value and the impact volunteers could have, that we all got together with new volunteers as well, just to celebrate each other and for them to be acknowledged for what they started.
Wow. So was the Canadian founder, yeah, or the original?
It was the Canadian founder, Reverend Dr. James Robinson. He's passed away some time ago.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. So tell us, like what kind of stuff are you guys doing? Like, I know we covered some of it. What would be some of your best successes? I know you said you had some good stories.
Sure. And maybe I can speak to what's in the video as well. So yeah, the video is looking at some of our girls' empowerment programs. So those are places that are, they're kind of like extracurricular clubs that are in schools. And of course, many girls are not in school. So we also have programs that provide access to those girls. But it's a safe space where girls can come together and learn actually about the rights of their bodies. And what we have seen is the incidence of then child marriage is going down in many of these countries. And as well in the video, there are some pictures of some tablets. So we are using technology. I talked earlier about the opportunities to have technology scale some great programs. So we have these mobile learning labs. So girls are learning on their tablets about the rights of their bodies, the importance of education. And so 33% now, there's a 33% reduction of girls dropping out of school because they're learning about these rights. They now know they have a right not to be married at 12. Things like that. And the other thing, Hillary, just kind of, it links all of, to all of this is what we call menstrual poverty. So it's a really key piece so that girls get educated on when they menstruate, they can find, they're in, now in many places, they can find access to reusable sanitary pads, reusable. Because many families can't afford to use them or buy them. Girls miss out a week every month out of school and then they drop out, right? Because they're too far behind, like that, right? So menstrual poverty. So those are key areas, ending child marriage, you know, really educating girls and then providing access to their families to the reusable sanitary pads, and then really supporting them to the staying in school, right, is the key to breaking the cycle in their families.
Now, okay, this is a question I had after our conversation yesterday. So they have a certain culture of this, let's say child marriage, and I know we discussed the genital mutilation, right? But that's part of their culture. I mean, one could say, hey, who are you to change that? You know, how it did, or is it the partners that are bringing you in that are asking that? You know what I'm saying? Like, if something's so ingrained, how did they welcome you to change it? That's what I was wondering. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's it.
And who knew that this was wrong? You know what I mean? Like, who knew? Who was aware to bring you in?
Sorry. Mm-hmm. No, thank you. Yeah, no, I mean, you said it. It's the partners, right? So all the partners that we're working with, it's their goal also to have equality for women and girls. So they are the ones who, you know, we select them, right? But then they come to us and say, these are the biggest barriers to having girls stay in school. Their parents can't afford sanitary pads like that. Mm-hmm. And so we're the, you know, kind of background support. We're not the ones going to the, you know, religious leaders. We're not the ones going to the politicians, to the government. It's the partners.
And are they females or males or both?
They're both. Yeah, they're both. And primarily female headed, but men as well. So there is a movement. Absolutely. I mean, many men also really see that these practices do not empower women there, and there isn't anything from them about it. It's just where there's still resistance. I mean, the example of the, you know, the menstruation, for example, right? So Crossroads, we work in Senegal, so in West Africa, and I was there recently. And our Senegalese team, many of whom are men, I have never talked so much about menstruation in my whole life. They're like, okay, so here are the issues with girls and menstruation, and here's what we're doing, and here are the sanitary pads, and here's the reusable part, and here's how we're getting the supplies. So there, right, there's, I mean, I came home to my sons and my husband saying, I think we need to talk about menstruation, right? So there are really some, you know, extraordinary voices of men that are, you know, leading the way, which is really great, because it sometimes takes that, given there's still such a lack of equality for women voices.
Yeah. And how, like, you know, when you're just like in your little fishbowl, right, you don't know that there's anything else, right? Like when the Reverend took people there, they saw, oh, they do it differently. Like someone had to have opened their eyes that there's another way, you know, and then now they're behind it and they're bringing, I mean, it's really incredible, right?
It's incredible. There's a young woman leader in Tanzania, and she's a lawyer, and she came and spoke at our International Day of the Girl. So the United Nations has an International Day of the Girl, and Crossroads has a flagship awareness and fundraising event. It's in person. In Toronto. And so we sometimes have these special speakers. So Rebecca Jumi, so she came in 2019 before COVID. So I had met her 2 months before in Tanzania. And she told us that she had been to court, her organization, and she was fighting for marriage, the age of marriage for girls to be the same as the age of marriage for boys at 18. So it was not. Okay, it was not. So when we met her in August, she was just finishing up at the Court of Appeal. So she'd already been through once, and now she was at the Court of Appeal. And she was telling us, here are the, you know, the four arguments that the Tanzanian government has against child marriage for girls being the same age. And, you know, I said to her, so what are you going to do if you lose? And she looked at me kind of like, you know, what kind of silly question is, you know, that's how I heard it.
Right,
like, and she goes, well, we'll just keep going, you know, like that. So to give me an idea of kind of the leadership, right, that we have. So by the time when she came and she spoke for International Day of the Girl, she told us that the Court of Appeal had overturned 100% of the Tanzanian government's arguments. And now today, the Tanzanian child marriage age is the same for girls as it is for
Wow. Now, what were their reasons not to do it? Do you remember?
I don't remember. When I heard them, they were valid, you know, taking care of, right? Wanting to make sure the girls are taken care of like that.
Oh, okay.
So again, not a, like being in their shoes, could completely get it. And there's a stand for something else, for the equality piece. So that's what's possible.
Wow. And so they were married. I mean, just to understand why, like, people would get married, you know, at 10 or 12. I know we were talking a little yesterday, but they would be living in a household and be taken care of. Right? That's because their families couldn't?
That's kind of the window dressing, right? So
okay.
So families that economically couldn't take care of so many children, less likely that the girls could have gained full employment, perhaps as much as the boys. Again, I'm talking in really, you know, traditional sociocultural situations. So please, let's have the girls be taken care of and then be married off. Now, of course, we know the horror that, you know, often ensues with very young girls being married off into, you know, terribly abusive situation. So that's what the partners and Crossroads, you know, were out to transform, and it's happening.
Good. Wow.
Yeah. So these empowerment clubs are really,
did the families get money for it?
With the dowry often, so that's sometimes part of the practice. Yeah.
Okay. So with the empowerment, these girls are seeing, oh, I don't have to do that. And where do those tablets come from? Is that from your organization?
It is, yes. So that's, you asked about sometimes is there funding involved? So so that's through, again, the generous donation of some individual donors and some foundations that we were able to provide those, which is really great.
Wow.
And what I will say is when I was there, the municipality now, you know, in some of these areas, they're putting in money from their own budgets. And that's really the key to sustainability, right? Is the local governments are seeing the initiatives are really transformative, that they're putting in their own budget. That's what we want to see.
Right. And who developed the training? Did you guys do that or did they do it locally?
A combination of. Yeah. So we have some experts in house. I mentioned, of course, you know, skilled volunteers. So this would be one of the key ways where skilled volunteers would lend their expertise, work with the local partners. And I think that's one of the great examples of that whole diversity piece, right? Of course, local partners know, how do you communicate that? What are the key priorities and what are the key needs? But there's some really great knowledge, tools, and insights, you know, from outside of the local areas that we want to bring in from the World Health Organization and from other sources. So to bring all that together, I think that's really where you get the magic and the possibility that it will stick.
Yeah. And the synergy. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so great, right? That people work together.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. Yeah.
It's really beautiful. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So let's see. We have 5 minutes left. So what other stories can you tell us so people can get really a feel, you know, for more? I mean, that's incredible what you just talked about. And then we want to be able to, you know, tell people what you're looking for, how they find you, how they can, you know, we were talking about volunteering anywhere.
Yeah, thank you. Well, maybe I can say a little bit about what the volunteer opportunities are and just kind of how that works, right? So, so again, our 60 partners in Africa, all working towards a vision of one world, the rights of women and girls fulfilled in those areas, they will say, hey, Crossroads, we need, and I'm just going to kind of share some of the areas and then how it works. So they might need support in some of the functions like accounting, you know, if you're a project manager, or maybe you're a communications, like you love communications. So maybe it's in those areas. There's actually fundraising. We see more and more requests from our partners because they want to be able to mobilize their own resources. So that's a whole world there. And then the other area would be directly related to the programs that those partners are running. So I talked about a lawyer. So, you know, having a legal support expertise in that area. Hillary, one of the ones that's coming up more and more is psychosocial support. So we're getting more and more requests, even as our partners and the women and girls they serve are really having mental well-being issues. So we get a lot of that. Experts, agronomists, so many of our partners and women in particular, and some adolescent girls, they're farmers. So if there can be volunteers in those areas. Monitoring and evaluation. So there's a whole realm, income, anything around entrepreneurship, all of those are really valued skills.
Okay, so let's say I'm a volunteer. I say, yep, me. I want to, I don't even know what I would do, but.
Communications. Let's say communications.
What do you say?
Communications.
Okay, communications, podcast, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say I say, oh, I want to volunteer. Then what does it look like so that people know what they're signing up for?
Yeah, so it looks kind of like a structured job. Like you've got a mandate, you'd have a job description, all of your costs would be covered. You would get, you know, an orientation. Then you would be going to one of the 11 countries in Africa, and you'd be there from, the shortest mandate is 2 weeks in terms of effectiveness. And there'd usually be quite a bit of communication with the partner up front, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 6 months. And then the longest is a year.
Wow. Yeah. Now, let's say I have a job. I mean, this is not paid. You're not getting a salary, but you are getting your expenses.
You're not out of pocket. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So how do people, they just take a leave of absence from their job, or maybe they're in between jobs?
Exactly. Yeah. So the average age of volunteer with Crossroads is 34. So that's the situation. Now, we do have some volunteers who do remote volunteer assignments. So you're just saying, well, I have a job, so how could I? So we do have that. And some of our sister organizations, so there's others like us in Canada, they do that a little bit more than we do. So far, we have found the best way to engage remote volunteers is when they've already gone to the partner. And then, you know, the relationship is really lovely. And then the remote piece, the remote assistance, support, collaboration is more effective. We would love to explore that more, especially for skilled volunteers with different abilities, including, you know, disabilities. They could engage and would like to engage more. So if that's of interest to anyone, they could also be in touch with us.
Okay. And how, so we got like about a minute left. Sure. I want to make sure people know how to reach you. Yeah. And what you want to lead, like what your vision is for the world, for your organization. Let's say 5 years from now, what would be like the best thing ever that you could imagine.
Mm, thanks for the question. So maybe I'll just give my email. So, if there's a way to put that on the screen after, but Heather, first name, at C-I-N like November, T like Tango, L like Lima, .org, C-I-N-T-O-R-E. So that's the best way to reach me. And I think, I mean, what I'd like to leave people with is to be engaged, you know, in one of three ways: volunteer with Crossroads or in your local community, advocate for rights, for equality, for whatever you see might be missing, and then to donate either financially or some of your other gifts. So volunteer, advocate, and donate. A world with people engaged in one or all of those three ways, I think would be a really great one world.
I love that. One world. Imagine there would only be peace.
Right.
There'd be no reason to have anything other than peace. And I would even put in love.
Right.
Right. Wow. Well, thank you, Heather. Anything real quick in closing or?
Thanks for the opportunity. And thanks to all the women and girls and boys and men that we serve for their courage and boldness. We're here for them.
Wow. Well, thank you, Heather, for who you are, for what you're doing for the world. It's just incredible. And thank you for your courage and just your stand for women and for the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started Getting Real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.